From the independent producer project of KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of stories and personal documentaries, and today on the program, I Knew You Back Then. We're lucky if we stay in touch with a few of our friends from elementary school, but most of them disappear into a cloudy memory. But still, there's probably that one kid from back in the day who made a mark for some reason. He might have been your best friend in the world, but somehow you eventually drifted apart. It might have been a secret crush that you still kind of wonder about. Or it may have been that tough kid who made a literal mark on your body with his fist. On this episode, three stories about adults looking back at a kid they've never forgotten. Beginning with this one. Hillary grew up in the late 80s. It was a simpler time, when you could stalk your puppy crush without any fear of being caught. Unless, of course, you took things way too far. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
The year was 1989, and Jordan Meltzer and I were in love. He just didn't know it. Fate brought us together in Miss Yablonsky's fourth grade class. We shared a desk block. Four desks pushed together. I sat next to Jordan. Jordan sat across from Erica Goldfarb, and Erica Goldfarb sat next to Paul Planzer, the new kid from Pennsylvania. Jordan was gorgeous. His pink Varney t-shirts were always perfectly tucked in and poofed out of his black stonewashed jeans. He had mastered the art of the tuck and poof. Like my favorite Cabbage Patch Kid, Kathy Alexandra, Jordan had a dimple on his left cheek. He was like the Jewish Zach Morris. And Erica Goldfarb was his Kelly Kapowski. Erica was perfect. She had the scrunchiest scrunchies, the slouchiest slouch socks. She was on not one, but two dance teams, jazz and rhythmic ballet. I knew I didn't stand a chance. I was kind of a fat kid in the 80s, or as I like to think of myself, a pioneer of childhood obesity. Paving the way for the future fatties of America, one Hostess snowball at a time. I remember asking my mom what the word husky meant. She told me that it was French for adorable. You know, the t-shirt over the bathing suit in the swimming pool look? You're welcome. So Jordan was out of my league. But that all changed on back to school night when my parents brought home the Beverly Farms Elementary School Student Directory. This hand-stapled, hand-Xeroxed booklet contained the names and numbers of every student in the school. And that is when I saw it for the first time. The most beautiful seven-digit number combination I'd ever seen. Before I knew it, my hand was reaching for my see-through Conair phone. I dialed the number, and it rang, and he picked up, and I couldn't stand it. I hung up, and I promised myself I would never do that again. And then immediately, I did it again, and he picked up, and I hung up, and I told myself that that would be the last time. And then I called again, and I hung up again. Soon after that, calling Jordan Meltzer became a part of my daily routine. Wake up in the morning, go to school, watch Jordan watch Erica, come home, call Jordan Meltzer. Eat a box of fruit roll-ups, call Jordan Meltzer. Watch DuckTales, call Meltz. Puffy painted t-shirt, Meltz. Homework, Meltz. Dinner. Go to bed, start the whole thing over again. It was totally harmless and completely anonymous. This was 1989. There was no caller ID. No one knew what Star 69 was. Totally harmless, completely anonymous. By spring of that year, I was calling Jordan Meltzer between 6 and 18 times a day. I thought nothing of getting up from my Bennigan's birthday party and calling Jordan Meltzer from a payphone. Totally harmless, completely anonymous. Until one night, I'm up in my parents' room, watching the Tracy Ullman show, eating a box of fruit roll-ups, thinking about Meltz, when my mom calls me downstairs. She said, "I just got off the phone with Harriet Meltzer." At which point, the room started spinning and I could make out words of what she was saying. I heard the word terrorized. The family is being terrorized. They're receiving some harassing phone calls. They got the police involved, who put a trace on the calls. There's a sting operation, and all the calls are coming from this house. Do you know anything about this? At which point, I did the only thing I could think of at the time, which was that I lied. I said, it's Josh, who is my brother. It's Josh. He's in love with Melissa Meltzer. They're in the same grade. He told me so. And then I ran up and locked myself in my bedroom, like all innocent people do. The next morning, my mom drives me to school. It's silent. She hasn't said a word about the phone calls. So I think, I'm going to get away with this. And then a second later, I think, oh my God, they are saving up this huge punishment and they're just going to hit me with it. My whole life flashed before my eyes. Sleepover parties, my phone, Full House, Family Matters, all the things that were important to me, gone. I'm going to lose everything. She pulls into the school. She turns off the car. She looks directly at me. And she's laughing. Little Miss Fatal Attraction. And that was it. I never had to issue a formal apology to the Meltzers. Jordan Meltzer ran against me for student class vice president in high school, and I won. In 2009, he friended me on Facebook. And then a few weeks ago, I get an email. Guess who wants to connect with me on LinkedIn? It's like he's obsessed with me or something. But I've moved on. The thing is now, with Facebook, you can check in on whoever you want as many times a day as you want. It's totally harmless. Completely anonymous.
Hillary Buchholz originally told that story at the Story Lotto competition put on by the Writing Pad Writing School, and she took first place. It's where I first heard the story. Talk to me, don't lie to me, save your breath. Don't look at me, don't smile at me, just close your eyes. I was so impressed by you, I was running blind. I was falling for every trick, every twist.
I'm Bob Carlson, and you're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. Today on the program, I Knew You Back Then, three stories about very memorable childhood friends. And when we're kids in elementary school, we all start out at about the same place. Our needs are simple. Find a friend, have fun, stay safe. It's only when we get older that our lives start taking very different paths. And suddenly, the friend you once spent nearly every day with seems like a stranger. That's pretty much the story of Skylar and her best childhood friend, Randall. They were inseparable neighborhood buddies, but then grown-up life happened and changed everything. And a quick warning that this story contains some bleeped words and a handful of N-words. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
When I was like 7 or 8 years old, that's when Randall moved on the street. He was knocking on everyone's door. I was like, I wonder what that kid's doing. I thought he was selling candy. And so I went to go get my dollar. I was like, okay, I'm going to wait for him to come because I want some candy. And he comes to the door. He was like, can you play outside? So I went to go ask my mom. I was like, this boy wants me to play outside. She was like, okay. And then I go play outside, and the rest is history. We would spend so much time with each other every day. We played basketball, football. We would draw with the chalk and like set up tracks, scavenger hunts, and ride our bikes, scooters, skateboards. We would stack our skateboards all on top of each other and try to jump over them with our bikes and scooters. In 2002, he moved. I was about 12 or 13. I was still thinking like, oh, he'll be okay. You know, we're pretty much the same. It was when I was like 20 years old, and I just happened to be back from school that weekend. And it was like early, like 9 a.m., the same time he used to come knock on my door to come play outside. He was sitting there with his baggy pants, chewing on a pin top and everything. And he was like, "Hey, what's up, Skylar?" I was like, "Randall?" That was the first time I had saw him in probably like 8 or 9 years, maybe even 10 years. A lot of awkward pauses because I didn't know what to say. And he left. And I was like, man, like that was intensely crazy. Like, because that's actually when I really started to think about, like, you know, how different our lives ended up being. I remember us being super cool, super tight, you know, when we were little. Remember when we used to be outside, like, every day?
We used to be hella cool, kicking around the block and till the ice cream man came.
Yeah, I remember that.
We would hop on our bikes, we would have races and
yeah.
Back in the day, I ain't had no worries.
Ain't had no worries.
Back then, my favorite was like on Saturday morning, we'd come outside and we'd just be talking about Pokemon.
Pokemon.
Yeah, man. When we were playing basketball in your backyard, your mom's would come. She'd come check on us. It was all good.
I didn't think of my house being the safe place. I just thought of it being like my house. I couldn't leave my house. Like, I thought of it being prison. Like, I was like, why can't I leave the house? But Randall thought that my house was a safe place because my mom would always check on us. I kind of felt like she was being overprotective, whereas most of the other kids in the street thought that, like, she was just being, like, a nice mom.
Yeah, but, like, now how it's changed, though.
Do you remember that time I came from my school one day and I was excited to tell y'all about that I had learned about college? I came back with pamphlets about different schools, like all gleamy-eyed, like, you know. But yeah, you were all like, college is not for us.
No, I'm sorry about that.
Hey, why are you apologizing for thinking that way, though?
No, I'm apologizing for shutting you down. At that time, I don't know. I really didn't think college was something I was supposed to be doing. Like, me? Nah, not ever. Nope. I just thought you were some type of special case. Like you had a really pretty light-skinned mama, and your daddy was around and caring and shit. So I was like, well, if any of us gotta make it, man, it's gonna be you.
My parents weren't lawyers and doctors, but a lot of my friends' parents were lawyers and doctors and owned their own businesses, and they were all black, you know? So I'm seeing people like, oh, this is totally doable, totally something I should be doing, and this is something I can do because I get the grades for it, and I can. Where he's just seeing crackhead over there, poverty over here, you know. This is his world. This is what he sees.
Now that I'm older, looking back at it, it was just that we lived in two separate worlds, really.
Damn.
You were on your, like, polo, crew neck, khaki pants.
The school uniform stuff, yeah. Randall was a short, stubby kid who just wore, like, faded black t-shirts and basketball shorts every day. His hair was, like, not really cut well, but I always looked prim and proper. Like, at one point, even all my play clothes were ironed out. Like, that's just how my mom was. And so, you know, when people would talk to us on the street, they would stop and have a conversation with me, you know. They would never, like, have a full-on conversation with Randall, you know. He was just another person. And I always felt that, you know, me and Randall were both just as intelligent as each other. But it was just that the way he sounded and the way he dressed, I feel like people didn't expect that from him. He would always tell me, like, you know, I got banged on today. And banged on is like when a gangbanger approaches you and, like, says, you know, like, where are you from? What set you from? Because, you know, that wouldn't happen to him when he was 8. But, you know, like, he pretty much had to click up with somebody in order to protect himself.
Tell me more about Audubon, your middle school.
In middle school, I became a man.
And what was it that made you a man?
I was providing for me, providing my own. I had to steal a little bit. I would lie if I needed to. I was just trying to survive, I guess. I mean, I was just trying to really get me some homies that were down to roll with me. It wasn't like elementary school no more. It was bigger. Kids had different swag to them because we're starting to smoke weed, ditch class. Females were growing bodies now. teachers weren't looking out for you, like, that's a given. I didn't even think I had to mention that.
How did the administration handle that, like, fights, like, all the time? Like,
man, like, half the time that would go on and no one would even give a like, you just knock a nigga out or a nigga would knock you out and that'd be the end of the day. You either go back to class, you ditch, you do what you want to do, basically.
Man, I remember at my school, Inglewood Christian, there was, like, almost never a fight. But at St. Bernard's, when there was a fight, it would be, like, three blows, and then you'd run away because you know you'd be caught. And, like, or, like, you'd have to, like, take off your uniform before you fought, because if you got caught finding your uniform, you were expelled no matter where you were in the city.
Oh, nah, man, I don't know about none of that. Niggas would fight until they knock niggas out. Man, I needed a crew to protect myself. But it's like, man, you know, like, you in, like, elementary school, you do that shit, and it's like, aw, he's just a little kid, that's cute. But, you know, you get into high school, and you do the same shit, and it's like, nah, you accountable for your actions now. Like, police might get called, security guards might come get you. I can't do that little kid shit that I was used to doing anymore, because then I'd be seen as a nigga, but that's like what I'm in, that's what I am, and that's what I'm gonna do. Like, I'm a nigga.
And who do you think I am?
You are a con artist.
Where'd that even come from?
Somehow you would manage to get away with doing some of the same stupid shit I would do. And then you would be able to get away with that shit and have, like, a clean record. And now you got all this shit at your fingertips now that you could go do.
Why do you think that is?
Maybe because your mama was nicer, your family was nicer, your dad actually cared. You went to magnet schools and private schools wearing uniforms. Like, I was at this L.A. school off of Crenshaw and the other one off of King. Like, come on. By eighth grade, I had already been arrested once. It was over some dumbass too, like, I'm smoking weed, stealing sodas. I don't even remember which one it was I got caught for, but I mean, like, come on, that's some dumb right there.
He had just gotten out of jail before coming to my house that day. Even I had been arrested and put into the back of a police car and almost went to jail. At that time, I didn't go to jail either, but I know that how easy it is. One mishap, you can just go to jail. That's the kind of thing, like, I would get away with something like that, where he didn't have something to vouch for him. He went to his court dates in basketball shorts and snapbacks or whatever. So people were probably thinking, like, this is just a bad, terrible kid. Whereas people would see me and say, oh, you just got caught up in something. They'd see Randall and say, oh, this is your life.
I don't even feel it would have taken much, you know? Like, just someone who would have just told me I could have went and did other things, even played sports or something, you know? Like, nothing even that hard, but... Or if I had a little bit of help or someone looking after me so I didn't have to join a gang for protection, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's the way of the world. Like no one believed in me. And it's like, I'm not crying about that now, but like I said, it is what it is. Some of us were just made to live, while some of us were just made to die. Like, not literally, but pretty much.
He is a little more, like, older seeming now. Like, we can talk. We have fun. It's cool. I think he can go to college. I think he can, but he doesn't. His view of the world from our interview is still very limited. Where I find spaces to, like, wiggle through and, like, do what I want, he lets those things hold him back still. And so I would have to say that, yes, I feel like we still do live in two different worlds.
That story was produced by reporter Kirsten Zilm and Skylar Myers. Story editing and mixing by me, Bob Carlson. You're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com, and you can find photos and information in all the past episodes of the program at KCRW.com/unfictional. And while you're there, you can like this show on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Unfictional.
What happened to those good old days when hip hop was so much fun? Oh, house parties in the summer, y'all. And no one came through with a gun. It was on the
I'm Bob Carlson, and you're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. We're calling this episode, I Knew You Back Then, Stories of Memorable Childhood Friends. This last story comes from Graham Clark. He only knew this one kid for a brief time in his life, but the memory looms large. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
The story you're about to hear is about a kid that I knew when I was much, much younger, like a six-year-old, maybe. This guy's name was Scott Dixon, and he was the coolest guy who ever lived. He was a little bit older, a little bit bigger, wore sunglasses all the time. He was the first kid I ever knew that had cool sunglasses and a leather jacket. I'd never seen a kid wearing a leather jacket before Scott Dixon. And he listened to rock and roll music, and he had spiky, cool hair, and he had hair on his arms, which nobody had. So I remember drawing hair on my arms to look like Scott Dixon. He was always in trouble. He used to, like, taunt a barking dog, or he wasn't, like, afraid of pellet guns and things like that, which I thought was so cool. I think he liked having, like, a sidekick. Kind of shadow him, because I was very tiny. I was a tiny little kid, real scrawny. So if it was, we're going to go throw rocks at a window, that's what we're going to do. Or he found a beehive somewhere and we're going to poke it with a stick, that's what we're going to do. I just thought he was the coolest. He was the coolest guy. So I started to get bullied because, like I said, I was a scrawny kid. And there was one particular incident. We had this place in the school that was called the mud room. It was like a very frosty climate. So you had to like take off your like snow boots and put on like indoor shoes. And that was the area you did that. In my head, I always thought the mud room was like neutral territory. That was Switzerland. Bad things could happen on the playground and bad things could happen in the hallway. But like that area, because we were all changing our boots and getting our jackets off. So like everybody's in the same boat here, right, guys? And somebody took advantage of that. A guy much bigger. I mean, so gigantic. He was pushing me around and knocking my stuff off the hooks. I sassed back at him. This guy dragged me by my ankles. He pummeled me. I was so upset. This was neutral ground that had been violated by this guy. Later that day, I saw Scott Dixon during a recess. He noticed that I was upset, and I told him what had happened. And he told me, you know, what you need is a bodyguard. I didn't even know what that term meant, but I was like, that is exactly what I need. We struck a deal. You know, you get snacks every day, and he'd be the bodyguard. He got right down to business. He asked me who was the kid who roughed you up. I pointed him out, and he said, okay, well, I'll go take care of him. So I'd taken out a hit, basically. And Scott Dixon threw off his jacket with no hesitation, and he took off like a shot across the schoolyard, just walks up to this kid, doesn't explain the scenario, just, I guess you'd call it a rabbit punch, bashes him directly to the nose, and this kid's nose exploded like a ripe tomato, just blood, boosh, everywhere. And, you know, it's terrifying and awesome. Like, it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen and just the worst, most horrifying thing I'd ever seen. And Scott gets hauled off right away, and I think I'm going to get in trouble, but he didn't turn me in. You know, at the end of that school year, we drifted apart. I didn't see him as much. Forgot about him a bit, actually. Couple years later, like 2 or 3 years later, we're at a video store and we see him, friend of mine and I, and he looks small compared to my memory of him. He wasn't the kind of big, burly guy I remembered, and he was still wearing a leather jacket, if not the leather jacket. The next time that I'd ever heard anything about Scott Dixon was he had passed away, which is a crazy thing when you're a kid. My mom sat me down. I remember I didn't want to sit down because I was watching TV, and TV was a very sacred thing. And so anything that interrupts TV, what could be so important that you're interrupting TV? It was that Scott Dixon had passed away. And I couldn't get over it, because I just seen him a couple months ago. And apparently what had happened is that he had passed away due to cancer. And the way they found out he had cancer was because he had broken his neck on a trampoline, because that's what Scott Dixon did. He would break bones and stuff. And so he broke his neck, and then during the x-ray process, they saw that he had some sort of tumor, which spread very quickly, and I couldn't make sense of it. I asked my mom if Scott Dixon was going to heaven. And it's tough for an adult having to answer that question. Scott Dixon was a troubled kid, you know? And so she sidestepped it by saying, you know, he's not in pain anymore. I thought it was incredibly unfair. You know, Scott didn't do anything that bad. He was a rambunctious kid. And I remember my mom agreeing with me and saying, yeah, you're right. It's not fair. Things just, they aren't, you know? To me, he was such a nice guy. He was a troubled kid, but he saved my butt in school. And some people in life are lucky enough to have a guy like Scott Dixon looking out for them. And sadly, some people like Scott Dixon didn't.
Graham Clark is a comedian based in Vancouver, Canada. You can find out more about him at grahamclark.com. That story was produced by Unfictional associate producer Nick White. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. Don't forget, there's a growing archive of all the past episodes going back to nearly 4 years of this program at kcrw.com/unfictional. You can podcast this show on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast sources. If you like this show, please do me a favor and leave a glowing review on iTunes. You can also stream all our old programs with the newly updated KCRW app for iOS and Android. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @Unfictional. As usual, thanks to the Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation for their support. I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.